You guys were at the CIA Security Annex, but were you tasked with providing security for the special mission, or just
just the personnel at the annex? We supplemented that with protecting the annex itself because we didn't have any base security as well. I mean, we had a couple space security guys that came from the agency. They were staff guys, but they really just monitored cameras. So our main job over there is not base security. Our main job over there is to protect the assets or protect the case officers when they go into town or provide surveillance, or sometimes we'll pick up weapons, you know, and get to get them off the streets. You know, that's just the bread and butter of our job. So to answer your question, no, we had no responsibility for the State Department at all. That was their own show. We just offered assistance if they ever needed it, just because they're Americans and we're there.
Right. So when everything went down on that September 11th, did they try to get you over there, or did they call for help? And
oh yeah, yeah, they did, and they started calling. And I know the ARB, that review board that the State Department put together with that was complete and utter crap, lack of a better term. We got called 9:32. There was an incident going on that we needed to muster. We needed to get together and get to the team room for further clarification. But once I stepped outside the door, you could see and hear the firefight going on. So immediately we knew the consulate was under attack. And then the State Department guys, that they shared the same radio frequencies with us, and we started to hear their ask for assistance on the radio as well. So immediately we knew that they needed help, and we just did what we did. We got our stuff ready, and within 5 minutes we're ready to roll out the gate and get over there.
But you didn't.
And that's
you,
when we were told to wait.
Oh, now who told you to wait?
Our team leader, which is a staffer, GRS team leader, CIA staffer, and our chief of base. He's the head of the base there. His name was Bob, and the orders were coming down from basically our chain of command, chief of station, which is in Tripoli, and if it was coming from higher than him, which most likely, you know, part of it, most likely it was. And I hate to get into conspiracy theories without, I don't like to speak in indefinites. It's got to be definite to me. So
right.
what I know is from the leadership there in Libya itself was telling us to wait, at least initially, and then 10 minutes later we were actually told to stand down when we were trying to push out the gate again, and we were told to stand down. The chief of base told us that there, and eventually we waited 10 more minutes, which now was 25 minutes. And we just rolled out the gate and disobeyed orders and just said, we're going, and we left.
And so did you make it to the special mission?
We made it part of the way there, and because we waited so long, the Ansar al-Sharia had set up blocking positions to the roads that we were going to use to drive there, and we actually had to dismount and go on foot. And that cost us about another 20 to 25 minutes fighting our way on the objective, onto the consulate. And that's one thing you don't ever hear is, they have, and they being the administration and a lot of the mainstream media, have relented and said, you know what, you're right. There was a delay. They were a delay, wait, stand down, it's all the same. But there were delayed. What they don't tell you is that delay cost us another 20 to 25 minutes because we had to go on foot, climbing walls and fighting and shooting and moving to the consulate to get to fight on the objective there. And so it took us almost 50 minutes. And by that time, the ambassador and Sean Smith had died of smoke inhalation.
Wow. What do you think, you know, when this book, you talk about the inside account of what really happened. What's new, Chris, that you think people might find out about this?
Well, the couple things that I told you right there about us actually, it taking almost close to 50 minutes for us to actually get to the consulate.
Right.
The stand down order did happen. You know, and then the other two delays that they had us wait, the actual fighting that took place. I mean, we were basically in five different altercations that night. You know, it also goes into who asked for air support, which I did. I asked for air support in the Spectre gunship three different times that night. Also, it goes into vividly the mortar attack and how precise it was, and it goes vividly into how there was no protest there and why, because we were out doing operations right around the consulate up until 30 minutes prior to it was overrun. And there was no signs of an attack. We knew nothing on the video as well. So it gives a lot of detail and it gives a lot of validation because it's giving you specifics of exactly where we were at what time and what we were doing And you know, that just validates the that we're telling the truth, and our story hasn't changed. But the biggest thing I think people will get out of it's not a political book. It does fill in a lot of gaps as far as, okay, of course, stand down the type of attacks. The terrorists were involved. Ansar al-Sharia was a major player there. They actually had a house that was built just a few hundred meters from the consulate itself. That the State Department, and this is, you don't get in the news, that the State Department guys were actually attacked while they were driving to our compound, and they were ambushed and almost lost their lives there as well. It just the whole night, I'll be honest, Gene, the whole night, the people that have not read the book and have only even watched just one side of media or the other, they have no idea still what happened that night. And also the clarification of, we had to take the Libyan aircraft to finally get out of there. The U.S. aircraft never came to Benghazi. We had to actually rent a plane to fly our non-shooters and our injured out, and then we had to talk the Libyan Air Force into flying us out at 10:30 the next morning. I like to say it's a heroic story. The guys I fought with were incredible. All of them should have been awarded the Medal of Honor. There are some things they did that were just incredible, incredibly brave and courageous, and that's the thing that people are missing, really, because this has turned into a big political agenda for the right, and they're politically death for the liberals and Hillary because of what happened with State Department and their failures. And they failed that night. They really did.
Do you point fingers at Hillary or the State Department in the book?
I can't point fingers at Hillary because I don't know. You know, the only point fingers I'll take fingers I'll point. Well, I'm backtracking. The leadership of the State Department failed us. The leadership failed Ambassador Stevens. They were asking, and that book does go into that as well. The RSO, Eric Nordstrom, I thought he was doing a tremendous job trying to get more security to the consulate there in Benghazi. I worked in Tripoli with and knew him as well, and he had for 6 months requesting more security, and it wasn't coming. And you know, he even testified in front of God in the world on TV, where he said, you know, and this is the total honest truth. He said, "I think I'm fighting the Taliban more in my own department than I am, you know, I would to the real Taliban in Afghanistan." He said something along those lines, and he was right, because he was trying, and it kept being told that, "No, you don't need it. No, it's safe. You don't need these protection." And he was warning him consistently, warning the State Department. So I do point fingers, and actually I said, I'm going to come back. I do point fingers at the State Department. They did fail. They failed their own people. And then as far as any support coming, there somebody failed us on that line. I don't know. I don't know who didn't, who said no support should come. But the commander-in-chief is the only one that can okay military force to come into a country. That's his job. So that's it. That's just his responsibility. His fault or not, that's what he does. That's what he's in charge for. And the State Department, they were in charge of the mission that was going on there. And they did nothing as well. So the leadership on both sides. So I don't want to go, Hillary did it and Obama did it. I'm not going to say that. But I am going to say State Department was involved in the mission. They failed up to that point, and then they didn't assist with getting people to support the ambassador when he was down, when he was basically on his deathbed. And then also the commander-in-chief, he's the only one that can okay military force being used in a country that we don't have military units in. So
right.
You know, that, take it for what it's worth.
Yeah. A couple more questions. When you talk as a motivational speaker, Chris, is it about this issue, and what do you tell people?
It's about leadership. It's about the perseverance of the guys and the perseverance of SEALs and Rangers and Marines, and how we go through training, and how even though you continually hit obstacle after obstacle, you don't lose that positiveness that you can get out of the situation. You've trained and you've been trained hard, and you've been through adversity, and you deal with it and you move on. And you, even when you don't think you're going to get out of there, you know no help's coming, you don't lose your poise, and you trust in your faith in your brothers, you trust in God, and you say, hey, we can still do this and get out of this. I've been through worse. My brother's next to me. We can fight on, and we're going to win this fight. And that's what it was that whole night. It was continually, hey, nobody's coming for us. Okay, great. No worries. I got DB next to me. I got Ty next to me, and we're fighting, and we're going to win this. And staying positive throughout. And with that positiveness, being able to generate chances, you know, generate luck, I guess I should say, that gets you the ability to get out of there. The luck of renting an airplane, finding somebody who actually give us an airplane to fly for the Tripoli team to come over. The luck of having somebody that can talk to the Libyan Air Force to get us out of there. The trust of the brothers to in firefights, and we didn't even need to say a word. Everybody knew what another guy next to him was doing. But that goes all back to the type of leaders that I grew up with. The General McChrystal, that was my first battalion commander. You know, the Sergeant Major Rothke, who was my first platoon sergeant, that were hard on me when I was growing up in the Ranger battalions, going to Ranger school, and dealing with that adversity at that levels, and just it gives you that mental toughness that you're going to survive no matter what. And it showed that night. It's fantastic. I still like talking about it because it gets me motivated still. I miss it. I'd go back there in a heartbeat.
So this book is out, right?
Oh, yeah. It's been out for... it came out on 2014.
Oh, okay.
And it's been out for a while. It was actually number one on the New York Times bestseller list for about 5 weeks, and then we remained on the New York Times bestseller. The hardback did till basically through Christmas time, till the beginning of the year. It is still selling well, and what I admire the fact is Mitchell did a fantastic job writing it. He's outstanding, and it did that with very little marketing and very little play from CBS, NBC, and ABC. We've never been able to be on the major networks, and they've never shown anything about the book or the story. So I was very impressed that it did as well with the minimal amount of exposure it got from the major media networks. And, you know, we're still not getting much.
Right.
But hopefully when the movie comes out, that will change.
Yeah, when is that going to happen? Is that going to happen?
Right now, I just read open source myself. Michael Bay is the director of it, and he keeps stuff very close, plays stuff close to the chest. The only thing I find out open source as well, January of 2016 is the last thing I read on the Internet. But I would assume that's probably when they want to, because that's when that time in the summertime is when movies are hot. And I think they want to get it out as soon as possible.
Oh, so is it already in production?
It's they're starting the filming of it. Yeah, starting to build the set and stuff in Malta. And again, I read that in Malta News. They had that in the news, and so that shows how much I am involved. I'll be honest with you. We do consult a bit. I do know Pablo Schreiber very well, the gentleman that's playing me. He's been fantastic. We're friends, and we've got to know each other very well. So I don't want people to worry. They're not going to turn that to a Hollywood fiasco. Yeah.
For people that pick up the book and read it, what do you want them to walk away with?
I do want them to walk away with the positiveness and the strength of never quitting. I read that, and you read the guys and read how our team just never quit. There was no quit. Even when the mortars hit and we lost Ty and Glenn, we still, nobody put their head down. You know, nobody said, we're done. Everybody said, knuckled up and said, well, we'll deal with the sorrow after we get out of here. But that was it. We'll deal with it after we get out of here. I think that is the biggest thing I want people to take from the book. It's not the political stance. There'll be stuff in there. It's going to piss people off, but that's just what happened that night. Just the heroism and the strength and the camaraderie, the brotherhood that fought there, and then just the never quit. We never gave up, and we managed to get out of there. And that's partly luck, partly blessing, but it says a lot for the guys and their character. My team, very good.
Right, but you lost two members of your team, right?
Yeah, and that's war. That's sacrifice.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, war, people are going to die, and that they gave the ultimate for us, and they should be honored as such. And I don't think they have been. I don't feel that way. And I knew Glenn Doherty's family sure as heck hasn't been, because they're still trying to fight with the government to get his life insurance, because the life insurance only covers it's the fine print. It only takes care of if you're married or you have children. And Glenn was single, so the life insurance says, well, we're not going to cover any of your costs at all.
Wow.
Death benefits, anything. And they're fighting that right now. So, you know, any word on that spreading out, that's terrible, because a mother lost her child, and he was brave enough to climb up on that roof with us when he got there from Tripoli, and it's a shame.